Welcome to a Fabric edition of Software Gone Wild. While everyone is talking about software-defined everything and who knows what else, we still need to have to build running networks, and fabrics are one of the options. Whichever vendor you talk with these days, every single one of them will tell you how VXLAN is the way to go and how everything over IP is the right stuff. And yet, there is this one vendor that is stubbornly working on something else. In case you haven't guessed, it's Avaya. And I'm sitting in Zurich with Roger Lapoux from Avaya. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Ivan.
They do have an interesting story to tell, and it's totally different from what everyone else is telling. So I said, well, let's do that. Before we go there, Roger, what are you doing at Avaya?
Yes, I'm product line manager at Avaya since many years now, focusing on the fabric technology.
You're the guy to speak to if I really want to have some interesting answers, right?
Yep, I hope I can answer some of the questions you have, but obviously we have architects that have the details that I can't cover.
Of course. Now if we start with a few simple things. Everyone is talking about fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
So are you. So why is your fabric different from other fabrics? What are you doing differently?
So first of all, I think we made sure that we don't do something just Avaya specific. We wanted to base our solution on a standards-based implementation. So our fabric is shortest path bridging based, an IEEE standard 802.1AQ. Obviously, we have additional capabilities that we added on, and I'm happy to talk about those today with you.
So let's start with the baseline. What is SPB?
SPB is an Ethernet-based protocol to enable network virtualization. I think that's what it says the most. It enables networks to virtualize networks in an elegant and simple way. And obviously, I think you want to go into details about...
Yeah, this sounded like marketing.
That was marketing. Now, what's the idea behind? But maybe before I go into the details of what SPB is, I think I want to give you a little bit, not marketing, but a little bit background on why this came about. So when we start with first VLANs, why did we have virtualization initially, which was just VLAN-based? Everybody has built VLAN-based infrastructures, I guess. There were some problems that need to be solved. So what are the problems with VLAN-based infrastructures? First of all, it is the scale. In larger deployments, the 4,000 VLANs probably doesn't cut it. That's one thing, scale. The other thing is topology. How do I build a loop-free topology with a broadcast domain, which VLANs are? And the other thing that comes to mind is the service provisioning. So VLANs have to be provisioned in a network typically on a hop-by-hop basis, on a link-by-link basis, which makes it very cumbersome. So the scale piece, when I go a little bit back to the history, was addressed. First, IEEE tried to address it by introducing Q&Q-based approach. So that increased the scale, so the providers were able to build larger deployments. But it didn't address a couple of things. It didn't address the topology, so the spanning tree or kind of multi-chassis-like was needed to be used if somebody wanted to build a large broadcast domain. It didn't address the provisioning piece. You still had to do with Q&Q, the per-hop provisioning. And the MAC scaling was also not solved. The user-based MAC addresses are also seen in the core of the network, and therefore that one, they didn't scale to the level that providers liked or large enterprises liked to use it. So then IEEE went down the route of introducing a technology which was called MAC in MAC, with 802.1AH. A MAC in MAC solves the MAC scale issue by shielding the core from the user MAC addresses, but it didn't solve the topology problem and it didn't solve the provisioning problem. So that's where then SPB came into play, where the spanning tree protocol for loop freeness was replaced by ISIS, a link state-based protocol, so that really elegantly, like in IP OSPF, addressed the topology problem. Now ISIS addressed the topology problem. But in addition to that, it also, with SPB, it also addressed the service provisioning problem, because now with SPB, services are only provisioned at the service access points and not everywhere in infrastructure. So it really addressed that piece as well. And on top of that, which we didn't talk about before, the ECMPD, equal path forwarding, multipathing, I should say, was also addressed with SPB by allowing to have parallel paths between equal cost paths to be used all at the same time.
Yeah, but if we step a little bit back, because I think we've missed a bit or so.
Okay.
So you said we went from simple Mac header to Mac in Mac header.
Right.
That was provider backbone bridging, right?
Right.
And that thing already has something called ICID in the header. So what's that thing all about?
Yes, thanks for bringing this up. So I stepped over that. So Mac in Mac header introduced the ICID concept. And I think that's exactly the key point that you're making there. That's where IEEE very early realized that it's multipathing is one problem to solve, but the other problem to solve is really the virtualization of the infrastructure. So to make the network service aware. So they introduced these 24 bits to create a service instance in the infrastructure that can be used to extend any type of network service across the infrastructure. So these 24 bits that are in the packet header really make a difference for provider backbone bridging, as well as then of SPB as well, which is based on provider backbone bridging.
Okay, so all this sounds really complex because we don't have the whiteboard. Mm-hmm. We have to wave our hands on the virtual whiteboard. So let's try to start with the simple stuff. Let's forget for the moment how ISIS works and all that. Mm-hmm. And we have the path across the network set up by some unicorn-based magic. And now a packet arrives at the network edge. How is the packet transported across the fabric to the other side?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's assume somebody has already configured the switches with ISIS SPB turned on.
Forwarding tables are set up.
And do I want to still quickly say what the fabric itself does in terms of forwarding tables?
Okay.
Since SPB is Ethernet-based, the only tables that are being used are MAC tables, forwarding tables, FTBs on the switches.
All the forwarding is done based solely on destination MAC addresses.
Exactly. So forwarding is done based on destination MAC address. There is also some source lookup information there, but basically the forwarding is done on destination MAC addresses. And the tables typically in an Ethernet network, the FTBs are typically in an Ethernet-based network programmed by the flooding and learning principle. But in SPB, for the core infrastructure between the SPB nodes, that flooding and learning is disabled. And the tables are programmed by ISIS, link state database. SPB calculates those MAC address information and programs it on a per-switch basis.
Okay, so in the core, you are replacing the flood and learn behavior of Ethernet with ISIS-based routing.
Correct. But the forwarding then is done on MAC addresses only. And we have to separate the backbone MAC addresses, which are the ones that, because we're talking MAC and MAC, right? The backbone MAC addresses from the end-user MAC addresses.
Okay.
So the backbone MAC addresses, if you have a 100-switch network, you have 100 backbone MAC addresses in that infrastructure.
And that's what a core switch would see.
That's what a core switch, which is called BCB, backbone core bridge in SPB, if it does only have core interfaces and no service interfaces, it would only see those 100 MAC addresses.
Okay, to establish a mapping. So BCB is like a peer router in MPLS.
Correct. BCB is the peer router and the BEB before
is the PE router.
Is the PE router, correct.
Okay, so within the core, you only know the MAC addresses of the switches.
Correct.
So yet again, in MPLS VPN terms, you would know the BGP next hops. And on the edge, obviously, you have to know all the user MAC addresses, otherwise you can't do forwarding.
Correct. You know the user MAC addresses or user information of the users that are of the services. I want to call those ICID services that are configured on that switch. So if your network has 100 services, but this switch has only two configured, it will only see all the members of those two services that are configured.
So ICID is yet similar to MPLS VPN route target.
Similar.
But it's a service selector.
It's a service selector, but it's a globally in the fabric globally significant entity.
Yeah, so it's route target. The other one is route distinguisher.
I agree, route target. Yeah.
In the core, it's pure routing. On the edge, it's flood and learn. What about the other edge?
So per service, as you say, per service, say you have a VLAN mapped to a service instance, it's flooding and learning within that service. And whether it's a remote attached host or a far end attached host, you will see the broadcast from the far end. And you will learn the far end MAC addresses against a remote BMAC. So in your local table, you see a remote BMAC as the next hop, basically.
So you're not dumping the user MAC addresses into ISIS?
No, you're not.
So ISIS is used solely to establish the topology of the core network?
Correct.
And then you're running Ethernet with Flood and Learn on top of that, per service?
Per service, correct. And I think what's to mention there is the forwarding or the flooding. There is no root bridge concept in SBB. There is always a shortest path tree built from the source to all the members of that service.
Okay. Hold that thought. We are coming back to that.
Okay.
We still haven't answered the simple question, how does a packet traverse the network?
That's correct. We haven't done that.
So let's do that first.
So you want to do an ARP or just an ARP request?
No, a regular. We'll come to ARP later. ARP has okay. been done. It's a unicast packet. You know okay. where to send it. What happens at the edge?
So the BEB, the edge, SBB edge switch will be seeing on a UNI interface. So we distinguish between UNI interfaces, the user interfaces, and the NNI, which are the network interfaces, the core interfaces. So on the UNI side, a packet comes in. It is a regular IP packet, doesn't have any additional encapsulation. And we're doing layer 2 switching here. So it will be doing a layer 2 lookup, looks at the user destination MAC address. In the FTP, it will say, I know the destination, it's in that far end BMAC. So it will encapsulate the packet with the far end BMAC of the destination, and the source address is the source of that local BAP.
So you put a whole new MAC header in front of the user MAC frame.
Correct.
Which means that you need jumbo frames in the core, obviously.
You need to have at least a little bit larger frame support in yeah. order to transport this, yes.
I didn't say gigantic frames, I said jumbo frames.
Yeah. I mean, jumbo, typically people think 9,000 bytes or something.
No.
We're talking about
15-something.
Yeah, 15-something, 1544.
Yeah. The packet is then transported across the core based on the destination on the egress BEB MAC address. And then on the egress side, you decapsulate and throw it out.
Correct. It's switched across the infrastructure based on the, as you say, on the destination MAC address of the egress BEP. And then header is stripped. And there is a lookup, because you could have multiple ports, obviously, on that far-end switch. Lookup on the CMAC or on the customer MAC address, and then sent out there without the encapsulation error.
So this sounds exactly like MPLS VPN, with the core MAC address being replaced by an MPLS label.
It has a lot of the MPLS attributes, and I think, I don't want to say MPLS is bad, but MPLS has a lot of great concepts built in, which have been reused in SBB. I think it's just SBB is a lot simpler to operate, but in the sense that the good thing about MPLS is it's a service-based approach. And that service-based approach is what makes SBB so strong, because it has the same service-based concept. I think for me, networking needs to become much more service-based. I mean, software-based SDN is all good, but at the end, enterprises particularly, but also carriers, they're deploying network services. And it's all about how can you deliver those network services in a robust, elegant way.
Okay, before we go into the next topic, which is the flooding part. Mm-hmm. If you have a leaf and spine fabric, mm-hmm. and now the packet is arriving on the ingress switch, and we know that it has to be sent to the egress switch.
Right.
How do you do equal cost multipathing across the spine?
SBB has the concept, which I didn't talk about yet, of BVITs, backbone VITs. So it uses a set of VLAN IDs in the infrastructure, in the NNI infrastructure between the fabric nodes, and builds forwarding trees based on the shortest equal path. So you're saying you're talking about a spine leaf architecture. So let's say you have 4 or 8 spine nodes. You would, if you have 4 BVITs, you would build 4 trees from a source switch perspective. Say the leaf would have 4 trees built through these 4 spine nodes. And then there is an ingress decision by the BEB which one of the trees he wants to use. It's like IP, ECMP. There's an ingress decision for the float.
Yeah, so you build paths across the network, and then the ingress switch decides which path to use.
Correct.
And then you use like a VLAN tag in the outer MAC header to signal which of the equal cost paths across the network you want to take on the ingress switch.
The ingress switch selects one of the paths by selecting one of the available bits to distribute to. And you obviously do this on a per flow basis. And the hashing capabilities of the ingress switch define which one of the paths you choose.
Yeah. Now for the acronym unhappy listeners, VID is VLAN ID.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
And BVID is backbone VLAN ID. So this is the 802.1Q tag in the outer, the backbone MAC header.
Correct.
And ICID is additional field in this outer MAC header, right?
Correct. It's exactly. It's an additional 24 bits in the outer MAC header that identifies the service instance.
And the outer MAC header, so that we complete this one, is defined by the provider backbone bridging standard.
Provider backbone bridging standard, right? Which even is before AH, 1AH.
Okay, I never get that right.
Right, so that one was 2008, I believe, ratified, and it was widely used worldwide. So it's a technology that is robust and especially focused on the provider side.
Okay, so let's divert into totally unrelated topic, and then we'll come back to flooding.
Okay.
If you want to support something like encapsulation, decapsulation on a certain chipset,
Well,
on a certain device, then the chipset has to support that.
That's
so
correct.
Which chipsets support provider backbone bridging that you could then use to build an SPB-based device?
So which chipsets to support it? I don't know whether you're asking for the chipset names. I'm not the right guy to answer that one, but we did it initially on our own chipset.
Mm-hmm.
Our ASICs are programmable, the homegrown ASICs. So we were able to introduce this technology on hardware that was delivered 2005, and so we were able to retrofit it. But since 802.1AH, which is the one protocol based where SPB is based on, at least the forwarding path of it, was introduced very early, many years before SPB was introduced. The typical chipsets, off-the-shelf chipsets from Broadcom and Marvell can support Mac and Mac. Yes, granted, it's typically the higher-end chipsets. So I know in Trident chipsets are all capable of doing that. And the newer ones, obviously, they're all inherited that technology and it's all there.
Any recent higher-end top-of-rack switch you can buy for your data center should support DBB encapsulation.
Absolutely, yes.
With that capability being in hardware, the obvious question is, what do you need in software to support that? And that brings us to the ISIS story, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Before going there, mm-hmm. we still have to answer the question about flooding.
Okay.
So you mentioned something about source node-based trees.
Correct. So as I said before, there is no root bridge concept in SPB. So there is no root bridge election or anything like that. No SPB calculates.
Root bridge like spanning tree root bridge.
Correct. Spanning tree or even trill, if you want to mention that one as well. There is no such concept in SPB. The trees are built on a per source basis. So that means each sending edge switch, BAB, participates in a tree, and he's a tree source for that.
And would that be generically, so from every switch to all the other switches, I have this flooding tree? Or do you do that per service, so per VLAN, for example?
Thanks for asking. The trees are established on a per service basis. Mm-hmm. Yes. So there is one all nodes tree, but it's not used. But there is the trees are on a per service basis. Therefore, if you have a broadcast, it will only reach the nodes which are participating in that service instance.
So to make a parallel now with IP multicast.
Mm-hmm.
In IP multicast, you have different multicast addresses.
Mm-hmm.
And based on what you just said, it looks like you assign a different, in double quotes, multicast address for every service that you transport over the network.
That's exactly right.
So every VLAN, if we say VLAN equals service for the moment, would get its own independent multicast address.
Correct. And that multicast address is a MAC address. It's translated into a MAC address that is being the state that is being programmed into the fabric. So that if I'm flooding into a VLAN and then I sit, the destination of that flooding outer header includes that multicast MAC address that it identifies the tree, basically, or the service instance. And then it's forwarded along the path where you have members of the service.
Okay, but you also said that you don't build shared trees.
Correct, yeah.
So what you said is like spanning tree or even trill, they build the shared trees.
Mm-hmm.
So in multicast terms, that would be star G trees.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what you're doing is you're building source-based trees.
Correct.
So you're building the SG trees in multicast terms.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that you need a different tree for every combination of source, bridge, and service ID.
Yes. You're basically building a tree per service.
Yeah.
And the tree is identified by a multicast MAC address.
So this doesn't work that well in VXLAN environments, for example, because we only have a few thousand multicast entries in our IP multicast data center switch. How do you make that scale? How do you make that better than IP multicast?
So since we are using multicast MAC addresses, we're still only using the MAC address table of the switches, so we can scale to quite high numbers on multicast.
So the real difference between your implementation and a VXLAN implementation, for example, is that you can reuse the MAC address table for multicast SG trees.
Correct. So we're using the same table for unicast as well as multicast.
Yeah, and you have like a few hundred thousand entries in a typical data center switch.
Data center switch, like 240,000.
More than enough.
More than enough. So scale on multicast and service, we haven't seen any constraints yet.
But I guess that also means that you have to somehow encode the tree ID and the service ID in the multicast MAC address, right?
Yes, since the destination MAC address for a multicast packet includes not only the ISIT, which is encoded into the packet, it also includes the source of where the packet came from by encoding the nickname of the source. The destination lookup can then determine on the switch whether this packet came from a legal source or from an illegal source. And this concept is being used to make sure that no loops are being created in the infrastructure. So packets can only traverse the path if they're coming from their source path.
So the destination MAC address for a flooded packet in the core includes the service ID and the ID of the source switch.
Correct, yeah.
And that's how you get SG trees out of MAC addresses.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so now we have three interesting things. You build the forwarding tables with a routing protocol. You build multiple forwarding trees, which are indicated by VLANs, and you build these SG trees using multicast MAC addresses.
Correct.
So how does all that magic happen?
The switches exchange the MAC addresses among themselves so that every switch knows who is participating. They exchange topology information with ISIS so they can calculate the shortest path to each BMAC. So that's basically the topology and infrastructure setting. And then once you have the topology and infrastructure set, once you configure a service, then the service basically registers. So a service, it can be a VLAN to an ISIT mapping. So if I have a switch A that has a VLAN 100 to a map to an ISIT 100, he announces that to the fabric through ISIS. So that everybody in the ISIS domain, and they share all the same database, they know that switch A wants to participate in this service. Nothing happens until a second switch says, I want to participate in the same service. And once that happens, and then ISIS calculates on all the nodes the path, the shortest path through this infrastructure. And then only the nodes which are in the path, in the physical path, start programming their MAC addresses, the BMAC addresses into the forwarding database.
Oh, so you don't even program the BMAC addresses if you don't expect to see any traffic?
So you do program the BMAC addresses for the unicast piece. The unicast is initially programmed, correct?
Okay. So that was the multicast. Yeah.
That was the multicast answer, yes.
Okay. So to rephrase that thing, when someone says, I have this ICID, everyone in the fabric goes like, ooh, this guy will need to flood. So let me see whether I am on the flooding tree from this guy to all the destinations. And if that's the case, let's program the multicast MAC address into my forwarding table so that when the multicasts come in, I will be able to forward them to the other end.
Correct.
Effectively, everyone in the fabric, it's like IP routing. Everyone in the fabric has to have the same opinion about what will happen so that you get the right forwarding tables.
Correct, yeah.
Then how do you build the equal cost multipathing paths?
ISIS calculates the trees and it sees, okay, there is multiple possibilities to reach the trees depending on the amount of backbone VLAN IDs it has available. So let's say it has 4 backbone VLAN IDs available and it must have them obviously in the fabric. Everybody needs to be able to reach each other through those, say, 4 backbone VLAN IDs. Then it can determine, okay, I'm building now 4 forwarding paths between, say, 2 nodes, A and B, that we talked about before. Yeah, it's ISIS, like OSPF with ECMP, can calculate multiple parallel paths. ISIS does it here as well and calculates the parallel paths.
One thing that I don't think we touched on before, it just occurred to me. Equal cost multipathing only works for unicast packets, right? Or do you also have like 4 different SG3s going from a source to a destination?
I think the hashing is on a per service basis. So you can do first service goes on multicast tree is on say BV1, the next service takes BV2 and so on. You wouldn't hash on one service, but there is one active tree per service if you want.
You don't want to send the flooded packets on different paths because then they might arrive out of sequence and who knows what would happen.
Right.
Now, another interesting question. Everyone is using ISIS. Well, everyone apart Brocade, I should say, is using ISIS when they build their data center fabrics. We also use ISIS for IP routing.
Correct.
So, have you combined the two?
Yes, thanks for asking that question. Yes, we have combined traditional IP routing, ISIS-based, with SBB. So we call that IP shortcuts, and we allow the routing information that is exchanged through ISIS to be also used to shortcut IP traffic across the fabric. So if you go back to the data path questions you had before, now if a packet comes in on the switch A and the switch A is the router for that default gateway, for example, for this packet that comes in, then the switch does a route lookup, and the route lookup might point to the fabric, and then the next hop is then the far-end BEB or far-end node, and it will switch it across the fabric to the far-end BEB and then send it out there. While it does that, it translate obviously does the routing, changes the MAC addresses accordingly, that's what routing does, obviously, and forwards it through the fabric.
Okay, but now let's say you have one router that sits somewhere in the fabric. So one of the BEBs is a router.
Okay.
And then you have 2 hosts in 2 different VLANs sitting somewhere else in the fabric. So in traditional bridged routed scenario, the packet would have to arrive to the router, be routed there, and then send back over the fabric to the other host in the other VLAN. Is that also what's happening in your case, or can you do something smarter than that?
We have actually 2 functions, right? We have the one function, which is you could define your routing right at the edge of the fabric, and then shortcut route it across the other fabric to the far end. That's one approach. Another approach that you can use is that you can have a layer 2 service, so a VLAN that is mapped to a layer 2 service, and somewhere, as you said, in the fabric, there is a router that can be anywhere that just participates in the same layer 2 service, but has a virtual routing instance or a physical routing instance assigned to it as well. We call that inter-ICID routing. So you can route between ICIDs on the NNI. So the packet comes into the fabric, goes to that node, and then goes out another layer to VSM to exit the fabric then.
Okay, so, now you totally confused me.
Okay.
This second case is clear, I think. You have a VLAN, and you have a router, and then you route the packet and it goes out on a different VLAN. And you say ICID equals VLAN, we are fine. What was the first case about with the shortcuts? What's the difference between the two?
What's the difference between the two? In the IP shortcuts case, the routing happens on a UNI lookup. So the packet comes in, it's additional non-encapsulated packet. There is a UNI lookup on the non-encapsulated packet. And then the destination is behind fabric switch somewhere else.
Okay, so do you do layer 2 or layer 3 lookup?
We can do both. We can configure this to be a VLAN that is bridged as well as routed. So if the destination is on the same subnet, then it's layer 2 switch to that destination. If the destination is somewhere else in the fabric, then it's routed. Basically, it's a hybrid in that sense. It's like a VLAN. You can do the same thing with VLANs, right? A VLAN can go bridged through it, or you can route if the MAC address is the MAC address of the IP interface of the switch.
Yes.
The IP shortcuts is on the UNI side. You do a route lookup and send it across the fabric to the BEB far end of the fabric where the packet needs to leave the fabric. Mm-hmm. So that's IP shortcuts. The other case is where the BEB is only layer 2, for example, and the router is somewhere within the fabric, somewhere, anywhere, it doesn't matter, right? And you configure on that ICID and IP address in the fabric.
Okay, I get it. So with the shortcuts case,
yeah,
if you have different hosts in the same VLAN attached to different switches, then these hosts would see the local switch as the default gateway.
Okay, let's say you have an ICID on 3 nodes, and all 3 nodes share the same ICID and the same IP subnet.
Yeah.
Now, you would elect one or more to be the routing instance for this infrastructure. Say, traditional case, you would be configuring an IP address on switch A, and then that switch A routes it and sends it wherever it needs to go. If now one of the switch B or C originates the packet, so comes from through those two switches, it is basically coming bridged on the NNIs, and then inter-ICID routing function that we just talked about before would then route it to wherever it needs to go. So you, in a data center case, let's assume you have a virtual machine on the VLAN on switch A and then the switch B that has the same subnet, same ICID. It will basically have to go back to the first switch to be routed there, if that's what you were pointing towards.
Yeah.
Correct. You can also employ some concept of VRP and turn on, we call that backup master function, where you can make sure that all the UNI start routing. But this is not solving the problem in both directions, right? These kind of tricks might solve it locally so that when you have the first hop in the network on a UNI interface perspective, can route directly. But when the traffic comes north-south, it will not know where the host is, and therefore might trombone to a different switch. Mm-hmm. So if you point to that kind of solution, I would like to explain to you how we are intending on addressing that data center use case. So this is something that we are going to deliver this year. It's not yet available, but it's a functionality that is targeted to roaming instances, right? You can say it's roaming in the data center, but there's also, you could also think of other cases where roaming might be posing similar problems. So where you have hosts that are moving around in your infrastructure and your layer 2 domain is extended across multiple hosts. It could be within the same data center or even across multiple data centers.
Let's not go there.
Correct. Let's not go there. But let's say in a data center you have 50 top-of-the-rack switches and you don't know where your virtual machines are.
Yes.
And you want to ensure that you always shortcut switch to the active virtual machine for this particular IP address. So we call this function distributed virtual routing. Basically, we allow that every Tor switch in this or leaf switch in this scenario that we're speaking about becomes the router for the IP subnet subnets it has configured.
So this would be the Anycast routing where every single top-of-rack switch can do layer 3 lookup and then send the packet into the destination.
Exactly.
ISIT.
Exactly. You could call it that way. You're basically defining a virtual IP address. Mm-hmm. Your default gateway that is IP address for that layer 2 IP subnet or layer 2 service. And it's available on all the top-of-the-rack devices or leaves that are participating in this IP subnet. Every node can route traffic directly, so it has capability of directly routing.
Okay, so this nicely solves the optimal routing problem within a fabric.
I mean, the big part is we need to keep track of where the host is, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal is to solve this nicely. We need to keep track of it. So the mechanisms that apply in IP networking apply here. So it's the gratuitous ARPs, it's the ARPs, and the ways how virtual machines in that case register or tell the network that where the location is are employed here. So you basically virtual machines moves, mm-hmm. tells the network, hey, I moved over here. And we basically then, where this host now resides, and update the information on that in that infrastructure.
When you say you know when the host resides, is that by host's MAC address or by host's IP address? I've seen two ways of implementing what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is where you route on the ingress, and then you bridge across the fabric and out. And the second way is where you would actually track the IP addresses of the hosts, redistribute that into whatever IGP you're running, and then you would do IP routing based on /32s or /128s across the fabric.
Right, that's what we're doing. Right. It's host routing. Basically, we track the host route information of the devices. So I thought you asked a little bit differently how we track it, whether we're tracking MAC addresses or... We basically track the MAC address of the host, but mm-hmm. we program the host route information in the infrastructure /32s, as you say, to then do the forwarding across the fabric accordingly to where it resides.
So you redistribute the host routes that you've learned through ARP or whatever mm-hmm. into ISIS.
We wanted to make this a very scalable solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, if you really want to go and target large deployments in a data center, that wouldn't scale, right? If we would go down the route of overloading MAC addresses and or in this case, even host routes into ISIS, that wouldn't be the right approach for us.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, we created DVR distribution protocol for that to track the host routes among. The concept is that we have a DVR domain
mm-hmm.
where all the devices, you can think of it as a bunch of switches, leaf spine switches, if you build it that way, that are participating in this routing protocol, exchanging the host route of information among themselves. So there is no central controller involved or anything like that. It's a distributed routing protocol that we're using for this. But it's not ISIS.
You sort of reinvented BGP.
The thing is, the beauty of our solution is that because we use SBB underneath, we have ISITs, and we don't have to do point-to-point, like BGP point-to-point topology information exchanges, we can tell everybody in one shot where things mm-hmm. are, right? So you're using the multicast capability of the fabric just to tell in one shot, the leaf says, hey, I know about this guy, he's now connected to me, and tells this to everybody.
Information flooding through multicast, which is available in the fabric.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So it's a multicast membership distribution protocol, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Can you then redistribute that into a traditional routing protocol at the edge?
I'm laughing because we had lots of debates about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I insisted that we need to be able to do this. Obviously, whenever people design networks, they need to be careful about using this capability, but because you could obviously overwhelm the traditional routing protocols, except BGP. But yes, we can. And I would suggest that people do it really only selectively for the host. They want to make sure they want to track and know where they are, right, to avoid tromboning. But yes, you can.
So you would say use host routing internally so that you get optimal path across the fabric?
Correct.
But as you go into more traditional routing protocols, think twice about what you really need to announce and only announce what needs to be announced.
Correct.
Correct. Exactly. So east-west, use the DVR protocol, north-south. Be selective in what you re-announce into the other routing protocols. Correct.
This sounds like cool stuff.
It's extremely cool stuff. I think it's really exciting, and I'm looking very much forward to bringing this to the market.
Now, when we were discussing the topics for this podcast, you also mentioned something called Fabric Extend, which is running SPB over IP.
Correct.
And I think we are in vague agreement that running large layer 2 domains across metro distances and beyond that doesn't make sense. So why would you want to extend Fabric across such distances?
So let me make a marketing statement.
Okay.
The largest Fabric distance-wise we have deployed starts somewhere in California, extends to the Nordics and Europe, layer 2 peering. So there are people which do, maybe it's just point-to-point, right? But they do extend large layer 2 over long distances and maybe run just 2 routers on either side.
Oh, that works.
So that works now.
That's exactly the same thing as a point-to-point link between the routers. It works.
Exactly. So there are applications where it makes sense to extend it very long distance.
You got me there.
But yes, we do recommend when it comes to low bandwidth, it does not really make sense to extend layer 2 far, right? Then we want to do routing. That's why I think a big premise was from when we said we wanted to build shortest path bridging, that we needed to support not just layer 2, but also IP shortcut routing, as we discussed, but also layer 3 virtualization across the fabric so that you can virtualize your network on layer 2 layer, but also layer 3 level as well. We haven't spoken about this yet, but it's important, I think, when people extend the fabric, especially when the fabric extend as the SPB over IP that you're referring to comes into play, then it's about the virtualization of layer 3 where people really use this, right? Extend. And we have seen this in surveillance infrastructures a lot, where people want to deploy surveillance, say a train infrastructure that wants to monitor all their train stations, and they run that in a VRF or layer 3 VSN or VPN, or layer 3 ISID if you want. They want to run this as multicast, but it could be that they have in between some not their dedicated fiber or Ethernet service, that they need to run this over an IP and PLS service. So when this comes into play, we saw that we needed to provide an easy way for customers to extend the fabric across an IP connectivity. And that's where this SPB over IP comes into play.
To step back a little bit, you mentioned layer 3 virtualization.
Yes.
You are, if I understand correctly, doing something like MPLS VPN across your fabric.
Correct.
How does that work?
It's very straightforward. We're mapping on the BEPS a VRF to an ISID.
Okay. And then you need to distribute IP routes or subnets from one end to the other end.
Right. For this, we're using ISIS. And we have seen that in many cases, IP routing tables, even in the larger scenarios, 10,000 routes is already big, very big.
Within enterprise,
Within enterprise. Yeah, this technology is not for large-scale carrier IP VPN deployments. This is really enterprise-targeted IP VPNs where 10, 20,000 routes is where they, even in the virtualized case, get to. And there you can map a VRF on a node to an ISID. Then the forwarding path within the fabric is exactly what we described before, no difference there. It's just a BAB or an edge switch decision how to route the packet across the fabric. So packet comes in on a VLAN which belongs to a certain VRF. It does a lookup. If it needs to be routed, does a lookup on that VRF's routing table and then determines which of the far-end BEPS is the destination and then switches, like the shortcut switching we've talked about before, switches the packets across the fabric to the far-end.
And the far-end does another layer 3 lookup into the correct VRF, which is identified by ISID.
Exactly.
So in this case, ISID would be the second label in the MPLS label stack, if we would compare this to MPLS VPN.
Sure.
What you said on scalability, if I just rephrase that a little bit, you only have like a dozen subnets per site anyway. So if I dump dozen prefixes into ISIS with TLVs, who cares?
Correct. I don't know whether it's dozens. But it's a few thousand, 10,000 or 20,000.
Per network.
per network altogether.
I said that like 1,000 per site.
When it comes to branch offices, it's probably 1,000 per site, but the head office might have more, right? It really depends. But yes, correct.
We don't need the scale that BGP could give us.
Well, that's not the target of this layer 3 VPN solution, right? One thing I'd like to mention, what our technology also does, because it's SBB and multicast enabled in the core, you can turn on multicast per layer 3 service as well. So we don't need even PIM. You just say SBB multicast enable on this VRF. And then we build multicast trees on that layer 3 constrained domain. So that all your, if you want to walk through this quickly with camera case that we talked about before, if I have a camera that is multicast enabled that runs on this VRF on a fabric switch, does send the packets, the multicast packets to the switch. The switch says, oh, I see this S, G here. Let me announce it to the fabric with that VRF instance ID, right, on this IC. So the network then says, oh, here I know about this S, G for this IC. And if somebody else wants to join that multicast stream on that VRF, it can draw the ISIT to that router, right? Let's say you have a station, viewing station, it does an IGMP request. The IGMP request reaches its own BEP, local BEP. The BEP says, yeah, I know on this VRF. I mean, this is within the VRF, within this layer 3 service. I know the source of that stream, so let me join that ISIT. So it does then a join to that ISIT, and the multicast packets are then flooded or along the tree to that BEP, and the flow flows.
So when you say it does a join, does that mean it actually sends an IGMP join over the fabric,
or is
this signaled through ISIS?
This is just normal ISIT. I want to be member of this ISIT. This is SPP. It says, hey, I would like to be member of this ISIT. Let me participate in this ISIT.
But does that mean that you need a different ISIT for every multicast tree?
That's correct. That's what we need. But as we talked about before, we have enough MAC addresses. So with scaling is tens of thousands of
so for every multicast group that you would have in layer 3 routing domain in the VRF, you would have to create a separate ISIT.
Does we do that, yeah.
And start announcing, hey guys, I have this multicast source. I have this source sending to this multicast group. I decided it's this ISIT.
Correct. Right.
Then someone else goes like, gee, I have a receiver in this group. I want to join this ISIT.
Correct. Yeah.
And the traffic starts to flow.
Correct. And this is all automatic. You don't need to configure these ISITs. We have a reserved range. And the announcement, is, since these are our source-based trees, they can all use overlapping ISITs there. So we don't need to provision anything manually. That's what I wanted to say. He's going to join that source, ISIT tree if he wants to, right? If he's in the same ISIT constraint, layer 3 constraint domain. I can build 100 VRFs, all multicast enabled, and they are happily running independent of each other.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah, so we have a lot of surveillance infrastructures built, and this scales extremely nicely. And you get the failover behaviors, right? Whether SBB doesn't care whether you have an L2 packet going through or L3 packet going through, the failover behavior is very fast and very robust.
Yeah, well, the fabric actually doesn't care because you just need a destination MAC address and the ISIT and off it goes.
That's right, yeah.
Which is sort of nice because now you don't have to deal with ISIS convergence and PIM convergence and BGP convergence. It's all done at the same time.
Correct. So one protocol that takes care of layer 2. Layer 3 shortcuts, layer 3 virtualization, multicast. Actually, we didn't talk about IPv6. So we can also do IPv6 shortcuts across the fabric. So it takes care of all that with one protocol. That's it. That's why it's so elegant, really. I think that's the right attribute for SPV. It's an extremely elegant technology. Sorry, we didn't finish the SPV or IP yet.
Yes. I think I understand now why you would want to do that. So you wouldn't blindly extend VLANs. You would effectively build something like MPLS VPN backbone. And in the case where you cannot reach the other part of the backbone, you would build sort of a GRE tunnel. Not exactly.
Sort of. It's VXLAN tunnels.
Yeah. So you would do VXLAN tunnels, whereas in the good old days, we built GRE tunnels and then ran MPLS over GRE.
Right. Right. Exactly. So it's basically that. where customers, we see this quite often, as you say, if you have an IPM PLS VPN in the RAN, they would like to extend two sites, and they would like to extend the fabric across it. And again, it only makes really sense when you start virtualization or multicast to extend it. If you just do pure IP routing, then I wouldn't say don't extend the fabric. But if you need virtualization in the branch office, or if you need multicast in the branch office, or in your train station example from before, then it totally makes sense to extend it over IP and then have run the fabric on top of an IP GRE, or in our case, a VXLAN tunnel. Correct.
By the way, can you also do this over IPsec so that I could pull this over the internet?
So, yeah, we don't care what's underneath. So if somebody has established the IPsec tunnels, yes, we can run it. We also support in some solutions fragmentation reassembly. So
that must be slow.
I'm not disagreeing. It's definitely, but if, I think, again, you do this if you want the virtualization. If you really need to reap the benefits of virtualization and multicast out there, then you can target that. But yes, I would agree, fragmentation reassembly is not the fastest.
Yeah, reassembly is hard. That's slow.
It's slow, and you have obviously you have an additional header that you need that you're introducing here as well. But we have seen requests for that, and people want to do this. But our target is right now not over the internet with this. We get a lot of requests to do it over the internet, but right now we are. Our solution is not encrypting the packets.
So if you want to encrypt the packets, you have to add an extra external router or firewall or whatever gadget.
At this point, you would have to do it.
SD-WAN gadget would be ideal.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Now I'm in marketing. I have to get out of this. So thank you for this great overview of what SBB does.
Thank you for having me.
If someone wants to know more, where can they find more information?
I think first I would want to direct them to avaya.com, obviously. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think it's always good to go on the wiki page about SBB. So there is a lot of information there that is not only from Avaya, but it's more from other vendors as well. Mm-hmm. And also some interoperability testing we did a while ago, multi-vendor interoperability testing. So I think those would be the points and to go and look. And obviously, if somebody has a question, they can also email me at rogerlapoux@avaya.com.
Okay, we'll put that in the show notes so that every spammer can find you. One last question. Now that you mentioned interoperability tests, obviously SBB is standard. Mm-hmm. But all the other things you mentioned, like shortcut bridging and layer 3 virtualization and multicast, that hasn't been standardized yet, right?
No, we have published a draft. So draft Anbehagen can be seen on the web as well. Mm-hmm. So we are open with what we're doing. We're not hiding. We have been in talks with other vendors to do some additional interoperability testing because we're not the only ones doing this IP-based SBB capabilities. But nothing has been formalized at this point.
Effectively, you published a draft which may be adopted by the working group, or it may be just an informational RFC, in which you documented the TLVs that you use in your implementation.
Yeah, we basically documented the details of how we do this.
So if anyone else can join the show, they can implement the same TLVs and that's it.
I would say it's probably a little bit more than that's it. Mm-hmm. But I think if somebody is interested, definitely contact us and we're happy to work with who's interested.
I said that was the last question, right? I got another one.
Okay.
Would you know whether these TLVs can be displayed in Wireshark? So if I would do troubleshooting, would I see them or would they just be TLV something?
So the IP shortcuts TLV, they are the normal ISIs TLVs.
Oh, so this is the IP routing
part.
That's the IP routing part.
It was just a discussion I had with engineering a while back. So we have decoders for Wireshark. Whether they have been published, I don't know. I need to go and check.
Okay, so if they are published, we'll put the link somewhere in the show notes so that people can find them.
Yeah, we'll do.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And in case you haven't noticed, you've been listening to Software Gone Wild. I'm Ivan Pieplniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net, where I blog, do webinars, and publish podcasts like this one. And if you want to listen to more podcasts like this, go to podcast.ipspace.net where you'll find the subscribe links that will bring this podcast to your favorite podcast player. Thanks for being with us, and do keep in mind that we do talk about software-defined everything, But as you've seen today, underneath it all, it's hardware.